Plato's accounts of Atlantis are found in the dialogues Critias and Timaeus, where he describes it as a large island situated somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, located beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which are believed to be the Strait of Gibraltar. Plato claims the legend was passed down by the Egyptians, who said Atlantis had fertile land, implying that they knew of agriculture during the Pleistocene. The capital city of Atlantis was described as a series of concentric circles of land and water, alternating in layers, with the royal palace situated at the center, with a temple dedicated to the god Poseidon on a hill. The well-designed layout of the city was said to be crisscrossed with canals and waterways, facilitating transportation and trade within the island, as well as an irrigation system. If true, this points to a sophisticated knowledge of mathematics, geometry, and mechanics to build these structures. These water systems were likely designed to provide both practical benefits and aesthetic beauty to the city, and believed to be a testament to the advanced planning and engineering skills of the Atlanteans, who were portrayed as a highly advanced civilization with sophisticated architecture, engineering, urban planning, and military prowess. Atlantis was said to be adorned with magnificent buildings made of precious metals and stones. These structures were not only aesthetically pleasing, but also served practical purposes, such as governmental administration, education, and religious worship. The capital city was also well defended, with fortifications such as walls and moats protecting it from external threats. The strategic placement of these defenses suggests an advanced understanding of military tactics and architecture. Religious structures played a significant role in Atlantis, with temple complexes dedicated to various deities. These temples were likely adorned with intricate carvings, statues, and other artistic embellishments, showcasing the spiritual beliefs of the Atlantean people. Quote, "Now in this island of Atlantis, there existed a confederation of kings of great and marvelous power, which held sway over all the island and over many other islands also and parts of the continent. And, moreover, of the lands here within the straits, they ruled over Libya as far as Egypt and over Europe as far as Tuscany." Despite their advancements, the Atlanteans became morally corrupt and arrogant. They engaged in imperialistic ventures, seeking to conquer other lands and expand their dominion. Their hubris eventually led to their downfall. Quote, "For many generations, as long as the divine nature lasted in them, they were obedient to the laws and well-affectioned towards the god whose seed they were, for they possessed true and in every way great spirits. However, over time, the Atlanteans became corrupt. When the divine portion began to fade away and became diluted too often and too much with the mortal admixture, and the human nature got the upper hand, they then, being unable to bear their fortune, behaved unseemly, and to him who had an eye to see, grew visibly debased. Atlantis met its demise and a cataclysmic end, sinking into the ocean in a single day and night. This catastrophic destruction was seen as a punishment from the gods for the Atlantean moral decay and hubris. There occurred portentous earthquakes and floods, and one grievous day and night befell them, when the whole body of your warriors was swallowed up by the earth, and the island of Atlantis, in like manner, was swallowed up by the sea." Some survivors of the destruction of Atlantis were said to have fled to other lands, dispersing their knowledge and culture. The memory of Atlantis and its demise was passed down through generations, inspiring speculation and fascination. Of course, this fascination has continued up until present time, with researchers such as Heinrich Schliemann making archaeological discoveries found in Greek mythology, such as the mythical city of Troy. That said, the German government of the 20th century spent considerable money and resources conducting anthropological research at the highest level, trying to discover whether humanity did indeed once have a global, seafaring civilization that met its demise from war and global cataclysms. The organization that conducted this research for Germany between 1935 and 1945 was called Annenerbe, which was composed of scholars and scientists from a broad range of academic disciplines that fostered the idea that the German people descended from the remnants of this ancient Atlantean culture, who during the Holocene were historically documented as the Aryans. In 1981, an interview was conducted with the general of the Waffen-SS and liaison to the Führer during World War II, Karl Wolff. He believed that the stories of the Bible were in fact, to a large degree, hijacked or stolen, and in actuality were about a demographic which descended from Atlantean ancestors and eventually gave rise to the Germanic and other related people, and that the German anthropologists, or Annenerbe, were trying to reclaim their identity, which many felt was covertly appropriated by a leftist sect that wanted to bring about a totalitarian, communist world empire. Was the Annenerbe sinister? I'm taught in school Annenerbe was to study dark magic to bring evil to the earth. The Annenerbe was nothing more than an organization that was like a museum. Those involved were dedicated to the study of Germanic history and the history of our people in relation to our origins. Those scholars in the Annenerbe had the whole world to study. Every idea and theory was looked into. Race was a main focus, investigating our early ancestors and where they have been. There were parts of the world where great cities and structures were built, but the people seemed to lack the intelligence for such endeavors. Every study that was done seemed to suggest the same outcome. A higher race of people settled in the areas of the world but did not last, and building lasting testaments to their culture that outlived them. The Annenerbe was in a roundabout way showing the area of Palestine, Persia, India, and parts of North Africa were concentrations of our people. Our ancestors colonized wherever they settled, building great things. Only one population on Earth has demonstrated the ability to do these things. I firmly believe the areas of the world now populated by other groups, such as Arabs, were in fact home to our people before many moved north into today's Europe. Many Germans belonged to societies that studied our past. Some looked for other reasons for our existence than what the church taught. They believed that the earth was inhabited long ago by a special race of people who brought wisdom to the ancients that gave them an edge over other people. They spread all over the earth and built great civilizations, but were wiped out by wars. It is interesting to me that now some scholars believe this could have happened. Rudolf Steiner was an Austrian philosopher that opposed the National Socialists. That said, he still subscribed to the same idea that the ancient Aryans originated from Atlantis, which he described as a spiritually advanced civilization that existed prior to recorded history. According to Steiner, the Atlanteans possessed advanced spiritual knowledge, and after cataclysmic earth changes which submerged the island under rapidly melting glaciers, they survived and migrated from Atlantis to various parts of the world, carrying their spiritual wisdom and cultural heritage with them. He suggested that the Aryan influences could be found in ancient civilizations, such as those of India, Persia or Iran, and Europe. Steiner viewed the Aryans as cultural bearers who contributed to the development of human civilization through their spiritual insights, artistic achievements, and social structures. He believed that their legacy could be seen in the languages, religions, and cultural traditions and revered symbols of different societies on both sides of the Atlantic, such as the swastika or the cross. According to his teachings, there have been several root races that have inhabited the earth successively, each with its own unique characteristics and spiritual qualities. This concept is mirrored before him in the work of Helena Blavatsky, founder of the Theosophical Society and a prominent figure in the spiritual and esoteric movements of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, offering her own interpretation of Atlantis and its sinking, which incorporated elements of Eastern religions, ancient mythologies, and occult teachings. According to Blavatsky, the Atlanteans possessed psychic abilities and had a deep understanding of the hidden forces of nature, and suggested that the sinking of Atlantis was the result of a combination of moral degeneration and misuse of spiritual and scientific knowledge, leading to catastrophic consequences and plunging the advanced demographic of humanity back into the Stone Age. In Blavatsky's view, the sinking of Atlantis was not merely a physical event, but also a spiritual one. She claimed that Atlantis was located in the Atlantic Ocean and was the origin of Cro-Magnon man, the first fully modern Homo sapien with a prominent chin, no protruding brow ridge, high forehead, and round skull shape. Of course, mainstream anthropologists cannot place their origin. The origin is not there anymore. It sank or was submerged at the close of the Ice Age. DNA sequencing has shown Cro-Magnon, which populated Europe roughly 35,000 years ago, to be anatomically and genetically identical to modern Europeans. That said, they had a larger cranial capacity than the modern average, and if the myths, legends, and secret societies are to be believed, also were the custodians of a higher spiritual understanding or technology that has been lost or hidden from us today. According to certain mystery schools, all human races have access to higher esoteric functions of consciousness, which lay dormant in most people, in large part due to a mismanagement of their own vital energetic resources. By harnessing, instead of squandering, this natural life force energy, which is known by many names such as chi, ki, prana, or vril, people are able to activate atrophied abilities, in particular in relation to the pineal gland, that allows a person to gain greater awareness of their higher self and interconnectedness to all life and the universe around them. While this may sound like New Age pseudoscience to some, this spiritual understanding is what led to many of the German scientific breakthroughs before and during World War II, as research into consciousness revealed that, in fact, the universe is indeed interconnected, and what many consider as merely psychic subjective phenomena, the Germans were able to translate into workable material technology, which allegedly is not the first time that such technology was used on this planet.
In the heart of Bremen, in northern Germany, stands an extraordinary building. Completed in 1931, House Atlantis was designed as an institute for the study of Atlantis and the Aryan superrace. The building's facade was originally adorned by a large wooden sculpture depicting the Nordic god Odin, crucified on the Tree of Life. Inside House Atlantis, an astonishing stairwell, built of glass and steel. It may evoke the Aryan exodus from Atlantis. At the top, the visitor enters a mysterious room. This was to be the teaching forum of Hermann Wirth.
Hermann Wirth was quite fascinated by the idea of finding Atlantis. His idea was that this Atlantis was not somewhere in the Mediterranean or something like that, but in the North Atlantic region. And in his idea, in Atlantis, 20 to 25,000 years ago, a Nordic race was created that was to control and influence the development of mankind to a strong degree.
In 1935, Himmler joins forces with Wirth to establish the Annenerbe, an elite SS unit consisting of archaeologists, scientists, and historians. Their mission? To search the sacred sites of the world for evidence that the Aryans of Atlantis were not mythological. Himmler wants proof they actually existed. Himmler sends Annenerbe teams across the world to hunt for proof of the German people's Aryan origins.
A tall, blonde, blue-eyed race lived on the island called Atlantis. They were lofty, educated artists, as well as incomparable warriors. And they were brave, for only the brave could have survived the floods. The people of Atlantis were the source of all art and science. And they were the ancestors of the Germans.
While most things to do with the German National Socialists has been denounced after the war, the Annenerbe were not found guilty of any war crimes or wrongdoing, except for one member. All of the scientists and archaeologists that comprised the Annenerbe went on to prominent jobs as professors in the world-leading universities, with none of them serving any time in post-war captivity.
All members of the Annenerbe became important scholars in the post-war period. And after only a very few years, most of these archaeologists became the heads of departments of new institutions. And it is an interesting aspect that one can't find pictures of SS Annenerbe archaeologists that wore uniforms within the literature. It is very difficult to get pictures of that.
Overlooked by the window of the room where Hitler wrote Mein Kampf. These events took place 50 or 60 years ago now, and it would be easy to dismiss Sievers and the scholars of the Annenerbe as a lunatic fringe. But that's not how they were seen by the Allied officers who interrogated them. Their report ends by saying this: "It cannot be too strongly emphasized that this was not a crackpot organization. And these were men of the highest caliber, professors from the leading universities, men of the caliber of the atom splitters and the V-bomb designers, engaged in a project to rewrite the record of the past in order to influence the future course of history."
Of course, after any war, it's the winners that write the history, and the world's most intellectually competent and objectively qualified scientists have been replaced by the world's most academically corrupt and politically motivated. Most of my subscribers are familiar with Operation Paperclip, the secret U.S. intelligence program in which thousands of German scientists, engineers, and technicians were given new identities by the U.S. and employed after World War II, often in classified projects having to do with advanced technology, including a secret space program that used non-conventional anti-gravitic propulsion. What most people are not aware of, however, is Operation Osovikeum, a secret Russian operation where thousands of German scientists were taken from the Soviet-occupied territory of Berlin starting on May 2, 1945, and transported by rail to the USSR, including equipment related to the production of the V-2 rocket and other material from the Luftwaffe's Military Aviation Test Center. In other words, were it not for German scientists, not only would there not be a NASA, there would be no Sputnik or Soviet space program either. According to the SS officer Karl Wolff, who I quoted earlier, Germany lost the war because they were outnumbered, but their technological superiority was without dispute, especially in regards to covert or top-secret projects. The Russian transfer of German scientists and technology was said to be much larger in scale than Operation Paperclip, including the Alsos mission, which was created in 1943 after the Allies invaded Italy, where German atomic nuclear resources were seized to be part of the Manhattan Project. In fact, there are those in the spiritual esoteric community that had insight and association with German occult secret societies, such as Swami Prabhupada, founder of the Hare Krishna movement, who was famously quoted as saying that the Americans did not invent the atomic bomb before the Germans did, but in fact stole it. In a lecture on November 20th, 1975, was quoted as saying, no, he knew it, everything, but he did not like to do it, he said. He was gentleman, but these people are not gentlemen. He knew it perfectly well. He said that, quote, I can smash the whole world, but I do not use that weapon. The Germans already discovered, but out of humanity, they did not use it. And all the, you're American, other countries, they have stolen from German ideas. Implying that there was a technology transfer as part of a secret agreement at the end of the war, which I will not elaborate on at this time, but insinuates that the Germans had technology that exceeded even atomic technology, which they did not want to fall into the hands of the Allies, which surpassed all publicly known technology used by NASA and was not limited to rockets, but allegedly included anti-gravitic technology that during the war was referred to as Foo Fighters, as well as saucer-shaped flying discs, which were reported as UFOs. What makes this technology so classified is not only its potential use as a military weapon, but the same mechanism which is said to make the disc-shaped craft levitate by creating its own gravitational field, presumably by bending space around it, is also the same force that can theoretically manipulate time itself. So while governments may or may not have faked aspects of the moon mission in a Hollywood studio, in actuality, they may already have technology that more closely resembles shows like Star Trek or Star Wars. In a recent episode called Antarctica Disclosure, I discussed alleged subterranean bases on Mars, as put forth by Haim Eshed, widely cited as the father of Israel's space program, who's responsible for the launch of 20 Israeli-made satellites into orbit. This former head of Israel's space program stated that various governments are already active in space, which he also claims is populated by advanced civilizations that are waiting for humanity to, quote, reach a stage where we will understand what space and spaceships are. What did he mean by this cryptic statement? In an occult context, it seems that he's giving an esoteric clue regarding what Einstein coined as space-time, that everything is connected to everything else, because there is no time. There's only the here and now, and everything is happening in the here and now, in this one place and time. And so our perception of space or distance and time is relative. The further one moves out from that infinite point of time and space, the more and greater is the appearance of separation. In other words, all things are interconnected, making it theoretically possible to transcend seemingly unimaginably vast distances instantaneously with the right technology. Because of this model of reality, there is the concept known in the occult as synchronicity, which is the perception of coincidence, the coming together of incidents of time and space. And so, just maybe the sages and mystics were right, that if there is no such thing as time, which incidentally the ancients deified as Kronos or Saturn, then it follows that there's no such thing as coincidence either. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.